What is the seal of God? It's interesting that we're in the midst of the seals. And it talks about another sealing. The book is sealed. It is sealed up, and no man can open it except under the authority of the one who sealed it, someone who has the right. And so when God seals a man, that means he has put his authority and his mark upon him. The seal of God is sort of set up in opposition to the mark of the beast. In the chapter 13, it talks about the mark of the beast, that no man could buy or sell, save he that received the mark, or the number of his name, or the number of the beast. And the seal of God is the counterpart to that. That God has his own who are sealed under his authority. They are his servants. This could be a symbolic number of all those people. I don't know, because it is given in vision. I think one thing is clear, that there is a fixed number. God knows his own. He knows his elect. God has chosen. It's kind of like when Noah went into the ark, God shut the door. When the virgins entered into the feast, the door was shut. It's just like when the apostles asked Christ, are there few that be saved? You know, when the sealing is complete, the winds are let loose. And all that destruction, all that death. And then verse 4 it says, and I heard the number of them which were sealed. And there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. Of the tribe of Judah were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Reuben were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Gad were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Asher were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Nephilim were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Manasseh were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Simeon were sealed 12,000. And of the tribe of Levi were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Issachar were sealed 12,000. The tribe of Zebulun were sealed 12,000. The tribe of Joseph were sealed 12,000. The tribe of Benjamin were sealed 12,000. And that is a different reckoning of the tribes than you would normally see. So instead of Ephraim and Manasseh, you see Manasseh and Joseph. Where's the tribe of Dan? No tribe of Dan. Dan is not mentioned. And I'm not going to speculate about it. I've heard people say, well, Dan is left out because of idolatry. Well, all the tribes engage in idolatry. And, oh, yeah, you know, there's Judah. They crucified Christ, but they're in the fold. So why is Dan not included? I don't know. I've read speculations. What can I tell you? One I remember is, oh, because of idolatry. Doesn't make sense to me. And Joseph is put in place of Ephraim. Ephraim was the tribe, the sort of leading tribe in the northern kingdom. Whereas in the southern kingdom, it was Judah, and so they became known as the Jews. But there was more than just Judah in the kingdom of Judah. There was Judah, Benjamin. But the thing is, even in the time of Christ, you see people who are designated as being from other tribes. In the book of Luke, chapter 2, you can read about one called Anna, who was a prophetess, and she was of the tribe of Asher. It specifically declares that they were still present in the kingdom of Judah, not everyone separated. And throughout the entire New Testament, Christ and his apostles referred to the Jews as Israel. Look at it. We could speculate about the missing tribe, Dan. We could think about why Joseph instead of Ephraim. But I don't think it's the real main point. Main point is God will seal a select group of people to be his servants in the last days. And when that is complete, then at some point after that, the four winds will be let loose, and the earth and the sea and the trees are going to suffer, along with the whole human race. So in verse 9, after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations, kindreds, and people, and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands, and cried with a loud voice, saying, salvation to our God, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb. And all the angels stood round about the throne, and about the elders and four beasts, and fell before the throne on their faces, and worshipped God. Verse 12, saying, amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be unto our God forever and ever. Amen. And one of the elders answered, saying to me, what are these which are arrayed in white robes? And whence came they? And I said to him, sir, thou knowest. And he said to me, these are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore are they before the throne of God, and serve him day and night in his temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto living fountains of waters, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. That is a very forward-looking vision. So he has the vision of the four winds and the angels, the one ascending from the east with the seal, ascending as with the sun. He sees this great multitude. Again, this is still in the seals, and this is all visionary. A great multitude which no man can number. So we have, on the one hand, we have this very defined number. Then we have this other one, which is innumerable. At least, according to him, he just looked and he sees this. At first he has this one where he hears the numbers called off of how many are sealed. This many sealed, this many sealed. Okay, 144,000, you could see that laid out in ranks, imagine. 144,000 men. Now that seems like a lot of people, but there have been, in the course of history, armies that big. And you can watch 144,000 men march by. And if they were in ranks, you could count them. But this, now he's looking at a multitude, just a sea of people. And they stand before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. And they cry out to God, "Salvation to our God which sitteth upon the throne, and to the Lamb." It's an interesting thing to say to God. Salvation to God. I just find that interesting because it's not something I find myself saying very often. Normally we think of salvation in terms of save us. Who doesn't think of salvation in terms of themselves? I want to be saved. He brings about salvation. He brings about victory. When he has the victory, that is his salvation. Because God, you think about it, he is born long this world. And his salvation is when he gets to remake it, when his plans come to a fulfillment. Because God has laid out plans and how he wants to raise up to himself sons. And those plans have been in action. So we wait for salvation, and God is also waiting for his own salvation. Not that he needs to be saved from death or anything like that, but he wants to see the fulfillment of his own promises, of his own plans. The one who sits on the throne, and to the Lamb. The Lamb is the one who is slain. The one who sits on the throne is the one who reigns. That both should be justified. That both should be glorified. So they fall before the throne, and they worship God. What are these which are arrayed in white robes? He asks the question for John. He's provoking him. He's saying, this is the question you should be asking. What are these? Who are these people? Where'd they come from? Sir, I don't even know to ask. And tell me. So he said, "These are they which came out of great tribulation, and have washed their robes, and made them white in the blood of the Lamb."